Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Macrocast. I'm your host, Ilan Mui, a managing director at Penta. My co-hosts are Brendan Walsh and John Fagan of Markets Policy Partners. And today, we are talking turkey. Black Friday will soon be upon us, and with it, the start of the holiday shopping season. Inflation appears to be cooling, U.S.-China tensions are thawing, equity markets are rallying. So guys, there's really a lot to be thankful for here.
It's definitely an upbeat tone, a whole lot different. If we flash back to the previous holiday of Halloween, it was definitely scarier. Yeah, lots of chills and thrills in the markets around that period of time. But boy, what a difference the last few weeks have made.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's start with retail sales, because we know that consumer is going to be center stage through the end of the year. And we appear to be in a bad news is actually good news cycle, where we see retail sales falling or slowing in some cases. And that actually being a good sign, because it means some of the froth from our very hot summer might be starting to wane.
Yeah, and that's really been the formulation, this Alice in Wonderland up is down, up is down, bad is good dynamic really is born of that obsession the markets have had with Fed policy and having that Fed policy be so central to their posture toward risk assets. And essentially, it really has been this change of expectations about the Fed. And it's come from, a combination of things. One was the, what was perceived to be an incrementally dovish performance by Fed Chair Powell at the conclusion of the November Fed meeting, at which they held policy rates and he downplayed the dot plot, their projection of median rates going forward, that had still, in the most recent iteration, retained that one more rate hike bias in the near term and relatively lengthy time at peak rates. He downplayed that. There were some other signals that seemed to show that that the Fed was probably done. And then the fact that the Fed is data dependent, well, that gives the market leeway to kind of, once the data comes out, really run with it and overreact to it.
Yeah, exactly.
so we've seen that with, CPI inflation data, going in the right direction, but still, pretty far from the target, eliciting just a massive rally in treasury yields and a huge boost to risk sentiment. When you look at Fed fund futures, the first rate cut for the Fed has now been yanked back forward to to May,
any odds of a hike were eliminated, right?
Completely taken off the table, any odds of another rate hike over the next couple of meetings. And so the shift in expectations has been abrupt. And some of that really is down to the Fed saying, we're data dependent. And the market hears only kind of two scenarios. Data is hot and the Fed is going to hike more and keep rates high, or data is cooling. And that means the Fed is going to start cutting rates pretty soon. But the reality may be somewhere in between those.
Yeah. But in that meantime, following the Fed meeting, the data has been relatively weak. We got the weaker inflation number. And then when you extrapolate that to the Fed's preferred measure, the core PCE, that on a year-over-year basis will be even lower. So I think that the market immediately takes the CPI and jumps to the PCE. But then the retail sales were weak. The consumer is definitely pulling back. A big part of the reason that the retail sales number was weak was because in October, gas prices came down a decent amount. But the market also pays attention every day. And this week, oil has plunged, down towards the WTI, the one we use in the United States, is, just above $70, which is back to recent lows. And then if we had a host of other kind of data, the initial jobless claims and continuing claims were up last week to the kind of the highest levels, especially with the continuing claims, which is showing that people are having a hard time finding that new job. While there's not a huge amount of layoffs, the unemployed, it's not quite as easy to get that job that you want. But I think the most important data point that we got was not from the federal government, but was actually from the Walmart CFO. So Walmart cut their guidance going forward. They had a perfectly fine third quarter, but they're seeing the consumer kind of pull back. They say, that it's not, that it's the end of the world and people, racking up credit card debt, just that people have kind of bought what they want and they're definitely much more price sensitive. So their outlook for the all-important holiday shopping season is below what the market was expecting. And, you know, Walmart shares were down, you know, over 10% because of it. We heard kind of similar news from Target also.
Target had a better quarter, and so its stock rallied this week. But, you know, still that was, you know, despite Target's shares were like way down going into earnings. So, yeah, you know, it's easier.
Negativity was priced into the Target. Yeah.
Yeah. They've been fouling up their inventories, but their guidance was really no more upbeat than Walmart's guidance was about the consumer, talking about, you know, the essentially downshifting and, you know, much more careful about purchasing decisions. That, you know, bodes, you know, bodes ill for the upcoming holiday shopping season, according to management. And this is something that, you know, BJ's Wholesale came out and made the same points this morning. We've seen big box retailers coming through this week with, you know, generally pretty sober outlooks for the, you know, the consumers' resilience to begin to crack and go into a holiday season that may not be what we hoped.
And part of the reason that Walmart cut their guidance, it wasn't necessarily entirely because the consumer is buying less, but also they're seeing deflation in their prices. So especially the food prices are coming down. And he said that that's something that we will continue to see. So it's very good for the consumer and we're excited for the consumer. But, you know, they report earnings on a nominal basis. So if you sell something for, you know, 5% less, you make 5% less if you're Walmart. So we're definitely seeing a decent amount of deflationary forces come into the economy, especially led by, as I said, oil prices, which, you know, will continue to feed through to the gas pump. We actually, a couple of days ago, the national average dropped below $3 a gallon, which is a very important psychological point for people, let alone an economic one.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to fill my tank for less than $3. So the national average, is an average. I'm waiting for that to hit in Virginia.
Yeah.
But I think what you brought up was really important in terms of the inflationary environment, because now we're starting to hear that, you know, directly from the retailers themselves. Home Depot said that they felt that the worst of the inflationary environment was over. So, you know, even though same store sales fell, you know, it's also because prices are coming down, and that's ultimately a good thing. I also thought it was interesting that both Walmart and Target mentioned two things that we've talked about ad nauseum on the Macrocast. One is the impact of student loan repayments restarting, right? And that being a headwind on their consumer, of course. We've discussed the fact that, you know, maybe that's changes sort of people's buying patterns, and maybe that means that they aren't splurging on some of the things they were before. It's certainly another couple hundred bucks maybe that they have to pay toward something else.
And they don't go splurge in the previous 2 years, so they don't need that new TV.
Yeah,
the other interesting data point, which came from last week, you know, FedEx guidance was way down. And FedEx has actually told their pilots that they should go work for, you know, American Airlines because they just don't have the demand for them. So, you know, that's part U.S., but that's much more of a global company. And, you know, shipping rates both in the air and on the sea are at kind of historical lows. So the global economy is definitely slowing, which also is a disinflationary force.
Yeah, unless you're able to be one of those FedEx pilots who can fly a panda, your services may not be as in demand as before, but that's like jumping ahead.
Yeah, they're busy. Seattle, the category is.
San Diego might be getting one, but here in D.C., it looks like we're out of luck.
but even as we talk about all these sort of the headwinds and the slowing consumer, it's hard for me to feel, I guess, to feel upset about this, because this is what we've been waiting for all along, right? I mean, we've been waiting for the consumer to sort of pare back. We've been waiting for those restraints to kick in as a sign that the economy is now normalizing as opposed to overheating. I know it maybe that doesn't make me, you know, maybe that makes me a little bit of a Christmas Grinch, but it seems like this is what we wanted.
Yeah, you can't have
consumer. Yeah, you know, the consumer is still, and it shows up kind of political numbers, you know, is annoyed with the high prices. So we don't just need the price, especially the price of food, to stay where it is. You need it to come down. And actually, for this Thanksgiving, you know, they track the price of turkey, and the price of turkey is down over 15%. So that's a good sign for the happy and healthy Thanksgiving season.
Yeah, and you can't have a soft landing without softening. right? And this is really what's animating some of this upside. The soft landing scenario is growth is comfortably cooler. Inflation is comfortably cooler. We get into next year and the Fed is cutting interest rates, not because they have to support a flailing economy, but because they're able to, because the economy is, you know, is not overheating, but it's kind of at cruising altitude and going along, and inflation is so much tamer, and so that they're able to, you know, initiate rate cuts in a very gentle and pleasant manner. That's certainly, you know, the kind of positive story that will animate the, you know, the kind of rally we've seen in November. It's been a really, really steep equity rally. And, you know, to the extent that, you know, maybe September, October, the negativity was a little bit overdone. You know, it's easy to say that this is probably, you know, in some way sort of a counter reaction to that overreaction. So this may be a little bit overdone as well.
The also interesting data point is the housing numbers have rebounded, you know, both official data from and also private data. And I think that's indicative. It's still at historical lows, but the consumer was in shock. We went from 2% mortgages to, you know, 8% mortgages. But now over the last, you know, a couple of weeks, mortgage prices have come down precipitously along with the treasury yields. And I think the consumer has now understood the new normal. Like you're not, if you need a house, you can't wait to have a mortgage at, you know, 3-4%, but 8% is a scary number. So now that rates have calmed down, we're seeing kind of a loosening up and people, you know, taking out new mortgages and applying for houses. The problem is there's no supply in the housing market, but that's a story for another day.
Well, I was wondering if you're starting to see some moderation in housing prices at all, Brendan. In the CPI numbers, the inflation numbers that came out, it showed that shelter was up only 0.3% in the latest month, and that's sort of half the level of growth that it saw in September. So maybe there's some hope there in terms of at least a ceiling, to use a pun. Yes. At least a ceiling on home prices.
No, without a doubt. So the official CPI works with a lag, but it's starting to feed through. But what we're finally seeing is both with rents and with house prices, the seller is finally conceded and is starting to drop their prices. So house prices are definitely coming down a good amount. And also importantly, rent prices are. So that will feed into the official CPI and PCE data, but that works with a lag. But I think the September shelter number was higher than people expected. I think that is likely to be the highest on a month over month basis we see for a long time. When we go back down to you actually, if the official data tracks the real time data, you'll actually have negative numbers going forward into 2024.
One segment that is still up appears to be online. In the retail sales that we saw, non-store was still up 0.2% for the previous month. I think that both Walmart and Target said that their online sales are still pretty good, holding on. So I wonder how much, too, there is a shift in traffic from in-store to more folks buying online, and that being a permanent shift, a permanent change versus, you know, something that we just saw during the pandemic.
Yeah, I think that is right. I mean, it's just a, you know, it's funny, just anecdotal evidence can always get you in trouble. But boy, you know, you go to the malls and it's like the restaurants are packed and, you know, there are a lot of people at the movie theater, but you don't see as many people necessarily shopping. And it's a, you know, it's a foot traffic is tough in this environment. Let's just like walking down Georgetown or downtown Washington, D.C., you see a lot of empty storefronts. And and that is, you know, there are a lot of people are staying, you know, still staying out in the suburbs, work from home. And we've talked in the past about how that's, you know, a really big problem for commercial real estate going forward. You know, has been obviously a long, long gestating story there with many, you know, many more chapters to be written in it. But yeah, we do live in this world where, you know, we would like to go back on prices and other places to the status quo ante, you know, where we were before COVID. But it just looks like you can't get there from here.
Yeah. And that's something that, especially the commercial real estate, is going to be a 2024 issue. But it's something that the Fed doesn't talk about at all. This week, we've heard a lot of Fed speakers, you know, very much sticking to the higher for longer. And you know, talking about inflation, but all the inflation number they're talking about are very, very backward looking. Lower rates is something that can help the commercial real estate sector very much. Not that they're going to, you know, cut to zero, but it's something they don't talk about, but something they're going to have to face in the new year.
Yeah. And we've talked about it before, sort of our call that the Fed is going to be very stingy with rate hikes. And you know, the concern, just as you said before, Elon, the slowing in the economy is a feature, not a bug. This is what they want to happen. It's part of the process of wringing the inflationary pressures out of the system. And I think, you know, they've made a calculus that it's a bigger risk to potentially let the inflation genie out of the bottle next year than to, you know, have a, you know, less positive economic outcome. They would rather have a hard landing than another inflation spike, I think. And I think that the, you know, hopefully they won't have to make that choice. But, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, this Fed is, and we've got the minutes of the meeting coming up next week, which, you know, can be definitely, if the Fed is trying to send a message, which they seem to be over the last couple of weeks, like, don't think we're going to be too easy, you know, trying to downplay this expectation of a dovish pivot. The minutes might be, you know, decisive in delivering that message that, hey, we're not pivoting yet. Even if we're on a glide path here and policy's on hold, that doesn't mean easing is coming anytime soon.
Even Larry Summers admit that a lot of this inflation was transitory.
Transitory on a longer timeline than they had anticipated. But there is a difference, I think, John, between, you know, choosing between a hard landing and a crash landing. So there is still some gradation, I think, between the various types of transition. I will say that one of my first jobs in journalism was covering retail. It's how I got into business reporting. And I remember so many Black Fridays standing outside of Best Buy or Walmart at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, freezing cold, pitch black, talking to shoppers who were standing in line. I remember even doing a story in which the Black Friday start time was pushed back to midnight on Thanksgiving, and we called it Red Eye Thursday instead. That was a brutal assignment. But I don't know that those shoppers are still standing out there, right? I think that people are sitting on their couches and shopping online or shopping on their phones instead. And so that sort of holiday tradition, that Black Friday tradition, is really just a legacy of a nostalgic legacy, really. And, you know, the holiday shopping season is much more dispersed than it used to be.
No, I think you're right, because I got a million emails, you know, to my spam folder talking about Black Friday sales. And I was like, I thought that's a day, but you're allowed to buy them now. You know, it's just a phrase now. It's not an actual day.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, we'll take a break there. We'll leave it there. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the potential for a thaw in U.S.-China relations and the latest economic data out of Beijing. Stay tuned.
Penta is the world's first comprehensive stakeholder solutions firm. We are a one-stop shop for the intelligence and strategy leaders need to assess a company's reputation and make decisions that improve their positioning. As executives in the C-suite must account for a growing set of engaged stakeholders, all with distinct, fast-changing demands, Penta provides real-time intelligence and strategy solutions. We work with clients solving complex global challenges across a variety of industries. Our clients span technology, financial services, energy, healthcare, and more. To learn more about how Penta can support your company, check out our website at pentagroup.co, our Twitter at PentaGRP, or find us on LinkedIn at Penta Group.
Welcome back. President Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping finally sat down together at the APEC summit in San Francisco. President Biden called it a constructive meeting. And John and Brendan, I'm wondering if you guys would describe it the same way.
Yeah, if you any meeting you come out of with the Chinese and you get some pandas out of it, right? How bad?
It's always a good deal if pandas are involved.
Yeah, you got to have that as a win. You know, I think I'm not an expert in military affairs or geostrategy, but one of the things that we'd heard from people who are was that the lack of communication between the armed forces of U.S. and China was a very worrisome thing. And that reestablishment of those lines of communication, I think, is reassuring. I think that the tone of the, you know, the tone of the meeting was positive. It was, you know, the atmospherics were kind of dictated. It was kind of a home game for Biden more than President Xi, because it's out in San Francisco. But there was a sense that, you know, President Xi might have, you know, a little bit of you know, PR kind of tinge to his engagement out there, like meeting with some old, like the families from when he was an exchange student, and, you know, lots of pleasantries and smiling. So a little bit of a softer kind of, you know, feel to his appearance, I think. And, you know, the where that's really coming from, is it because, you know, China is, you know, struggling economically, and, you know, they need to get a break on, you know, it'd be good for them to get a break on some tariffs down the road or something, or set the table for something along those lines if Biden's in a second term. You know, it's hard to say, but certainly the atmospherics were better. And, you know, the and she is obviously like is courting the business leaders of the U.S. who are, you know, perfectly happy to be courted, it seems, from the standing ovation. So, you know, there are better atmospherics in general, but still behind, you know, in the background is that still, it's not as though the U.S. is going to back off this chips, this chips embargo. And that's a national security imperative that is, you know, very well understood by all sides. And, you know, there are other dynamics that are just going to continue to go along with that. And, you know, the tensions in the Taiwan Strait. You know, there's a big election coming up next year over there. So, you know, we will early next year. So it's again, you know, it's an incremental improvement, but hardly a solution to the long.
Yeah, both sides didn't really pull punches on the Taiwan. He's like, you know, we're going to do it. They're like, please don't do it.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, you know, obviously the sit down was it was an important one and in a well-publicized moment, but the degree to which they highlighted, you know, Xi's long-standing ties to the U.S. and sort of the long relationship that Biden and Xi have had. So it's not really just about, you know, where the relationship is today, but it's the evolution, right, of these long-standing ties that I think was interesting for them to sort of draw out and to highlight, because a relationship has seen a lot of ups and downs over the course of the past decade. But, you know, highlighting that they have been able to work through it in the past, I think was significant. The other thing that I'm wondering plays into some of this, which you alluded to a little bit, John, is that right now we're at a position where the U.S. has a lot more economic leverage than China does right now. China's economy is weakening, and the U.S. economy, while consumers may be pulling back, may be headed for that soft landing. What does the latest data out of China tell us?
So the latest data that came in, we got the October growth numbers, industrial production, retail sales, and fixed asset investment. Those are kind of like the big three of the economic, you know, we'll throw in trade as well, but it doesn't, it comes in separately. So these are clustered together, and they give you an interesting update every month. Chinese data is usually taken with a grain of salt, but, you know, the directionality is and overall, it's, you know, it, these are not thrown in the garbage as, you know, completely stage managed numbers. And if, you know, these are not necessarily all that flattering kind of numbers. So they are publishing, you know, what amounts to kind of bad news on some of these fronts. It's a little bit better over the last couple of months. It seems to have pulled out of its dive. With industrial production, you know, stabilizing at least in the mid 4% growth rate. Now that's, you know, sounds all right for a developed country, but it's pretty slow in the grand scheme of things for China. We've got a bigger bounce in retail sales numbers, up to 7.6%, from 5.5% the previous month. That is an improving trend, but at the same time, you know, we just got, some indications from their like online shopping day, their like Amazon Prime Day is Singles Day, and that was apparently pretty weak. And Alibaba, one of the big e-commerce giants over there, just reported their numbers, which were good, but you know they've got some soul searching, I guess, at the management level about, you know, the health of even e-commerce in China. So it's not a picture of, you know, of a swift uptrend. Obviously, the Chinese government and People's Bank of China are in stimulus mode, but it's not the kind of, you know, guns blazing fiscal and monetary stimulus campaign that we saw, you know, a decade ago when China was trying to pull its economy out of the mud. This is a lot more measured, a lot more piecemeal, and targeted at and less effective. It's notable looking at fixed asset investment. That is where property investment resides within these data, and it is still very, very weak. And property has been that, you know, that nagging injury, that legacy problem that has really been a weight on the country's growth fortunes.
Well, the other thing the U.S. has got going for us is that we are skating by the potentially self-inflicted wounds that have constantly threatened to come up. You know, it's today is November the 17th. And guess what? The government's not shutting down. That's good news. You know, I don't know how long it'll last. Right now, there is the current stopgap bill would keep the government open through January 19th for certain agencies, February 2nd for other agencies. But what it does mean is that at least through the end of the year, you know, we have a little bit of a reprieve from the constant threat of a looming federal government shutdown that would, at the very least, derail sentiment.
Yeah, you know, somewhere Kevin McCarthy is looking at this and rolling his eyes, right? Because this bill that passed is exactly the kind of thing that got him ousted. But, you know, it's before the holidays, everybody's a little bit tired. And the sort of far, you know, the extreme of the GOP House caucus, you know, consistency isn't, and, you know, principled stands aren't necessarily going to be their MO for all of these things. It's, you know, it just seemed like nobody had the appetite for another, you know, another speaker fight at this point. And so they're going to skate through the holidays and see what's happening. And obviously there's some consternation among, you know, some of the more vociferous members of the caucus. There were some speeches on the House floor, pretty critical from the GOP to its own members. But, you know, at least, you know, this is the near term, we just kicking that can into next year past the holidays, so at least we can get a little bit of reprieve.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, once again, they needed Democrats. Guess what? Republicans and Democrats had to work together. Imagine that in order to keep the government open. So that was one. We have a new date to worry about, but it's not until 2024. What is a little bit worrisome is that Republicans in the House have not yet been able to pass a spending bill on their own, any of the appropriations bills on their own. They tried and failed to pass the Commerce Bill, the Financial Services Bill, the Housing and Transportation Bills, and all of those had to get pulled at the last minute because they weren't able to come to any sort of agreement. So there is still this risk of infighting within the Republican Party, certainly in the new year. And that's not even before they get to what they would have to agree to with Democrats in order to get anything passed. So we still seem to be in the same morass. But, you know, I am grateful that for all my friends and former colleagues in the media, that they won't have to be spending their holiday standing outside the speaker's office waiting for the clock to tick down to midnight and for the government to shut down.
Yes, it's a gift we can all be grateful for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I will let our audience know that we're going to be taking a break for Thanksgiving. So this is my time to ask you guys, you know, what your plans are for the holidays.
Oh, our friends have a Thanksgiving dinner they invited us up to in Baltimore, and they are a couple of consummate foodies. And so we are delighted. They're wonderful hosts and hostesses. And so a magnificent time. Thanksgiving in Baltimore.
Fantastic.
A new tradition.
Brendan, when you mentioned that turkey is 15% cheaper than it used to be, and I thought, wow, does that mean that I can eat 15% more than I did, yeah. than I did last year?
Yes. The more you eat, the more you save.
Right. What are your plans, Brendan?
I'm going to Cape Cod. It was my mom's 80th birthday a couple of days ago. So we're going to kind of combine the two and have a fun week.
Fantastic.
How about you, Elon?
Oh, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be hosting our family. I think we're going to be frying a turkey this year. My husband does like a 24-hour brine, and then we're able to fry it. So it should be good times. But that does it for us today, everybody. I'm Ilan Mui from Penta. My co-hosts are John and Brendan from Markets Policy Partners. We hope that you enjoyed our show and that you have a fantastic Thanksgiving as well. Feel free to listen, like, and subscribe to our podcast while you're laying around on the couch this holiday. And of course, we are so grateful and thankful for you, our listeners. Have a great day.